Do you find yourself having to micromanage your pastoral staff and the projects they're over at your church on a regular basis because you can't trust that the job will get done the way you want it to? Are you tired of having to follow up with people over every little thing just to make sure things are ready when they need to be? Do you wish you could simply delegate out, empower your staff to do something and not have to worry about it getting done? Well, in today's episode, we're going to cover the five things that you need to do to make sure you never have to micromanage anyone ever again. Let's get started. So the big question is this: how do pastors like us who remain focused on the mission of Jesus and serving our communities without being distracted by everything in the world around us, how do we increase our effectiveness while living a lifestyle that doesn't compromise our health, our families, or our personal relationships with Jesus? That's the question this podcast is going to answer. I'm Dr. Brandon Partycooper, and welcome to the Ministry Hackers Podcast. Welcome, everyone, to this episode. It's Friday. I hope you are doing wonderfully. If this is your first time with us here at the Ministry Hackers Podcast, my name is Brandon Partycooper, and I am the founder of Ministry Hackers. And I'm here with my co-host, Jason Baca, Dr. Jason Baca, and he is joining us today as we dive into this topic. But before we get started, we are only 10 days away. So a week from this coming Monday, we are going to launch the very first Ministry Hackers Challenge. And I'm super excited about it because it's for all of you lead pastors out there who are caught in that tension between wanting to pastor a growing church, but also wanting to spend time with your family, especially if you have small children and you know the value of being there at those crucial moments of their growing up years. And so what we're wanting to do for 5 days, starting on May 3rd, is we are going to go live every day for 5 days at 1 o'clock PM Central Time. And we're going to show you exactly how to skyrocket your pastoral staff's productivity. We're going to walk you step-by-step over the 5 days. And what you will do is you will be able to delegate out and increase the productivity of your pastoral staff so that you can have a growing church that's reaching people and making an impact for the kingdom of God, but also so you can be home with your family and spend time with them. It's free. It's 5 days. It starts on May 3rd. All you have to do is go to ministryhackers.com/challenge and sign up. Just put your name, put your email. We'll send you all the information you're going to need. May 3rd, 10 days, a week from this coming Monday, we are going to kick off the challenge. And it's going to be so much fun. I'm super excited. We've been working really hard to get it ready for you, and I'm excited to get it launched. So please go to ministryhackers.com/challenge, sign up so you're ready to go on Monday, May 3rd. All right, so let's go ahead and welcome Jason into the podcast. How you doing, Jason?
Hey, hey, how's it going, man? Good to see you again.
Good seeing you. It's
kind
Friday.
Of a blue super excited. And purple day today, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're wearing purple. I'm wearing a bluish purple.
Right.
I promise we didn't call each other before the podcast to make sure that we were color coordinated.
Yeah, we had the same standby colors hanging next to our desks.
That's right. Emergency podcast shirts. Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to see how many of our audience. So we were talking before the podcast. We were talking about a pastor that Jason knew that had an emergency suit in his office ready to go whenever the time arose as a pastor. And so I would be curious to see how many of you out there have that emergency outfit or suit or whatever it is? Because we were talking, and I feel like that's something maybe that was part of the older generation of pastors. Maybe some of us still in the younger generation do that. So it'd be interesting to see who still does that. So I've never done that. In all my years of ministry, I don't think I ever had a suit sitting in the office ready to go. But
I mean, it kind of makes sense, especially as you know, as a pastor, like things just can get dropped on you at the last minute. And as pastors, you know, like the big things are always weddings and funerals, right? So it makes sense that if you're just in your hoodie hanging out at the office and all of a sudden it's like, hey, can you fill in on the funeral at 2 o'clock? You know, and it's lunchtime right now. It's just like Superman, you know, goes into the phone booth and like rips off his shirt.
Throws the suit on.
Yeah, you go grab your emergency suit, like with the theme music, you know, and then you're like, boom, you're ready to... you know, then you know, to bury somebody. That's
there you go. And nobody knows any different.
Yeah, that's
nobody
right. They think that you, they think you do that every day.
Yeah. I think when I was growing up in my youth group, I think that I thought my senior pastor wore a suit all the time, like slept in a suit. And so I think we've moved past those days for the most part.
Right.
So yesterday we talked about how to how to graciously invite someone to go be successful elsewhere. In other words, we talked about how to let people go in a nice way. And so, so today we are going to switch gears a little bit and we're going to focus in on how do you avoid being a micromanager? Now, none of us want to be, you know, I think that deep down at the core level of who we are cognitively, as lead pastors, we don't want to be micromanagers. But I think that sometimes, whether it's intentionally or usually unintentionally, we become micromanagers. And we don't like that feeling. We don't like to be in that role. But a lot of times it's other things that may cause that for us. And so what we're going to do today is we're going to kind of cover the five things that you can do that are within your control that can keep you from being a micromanager. If you do all these five, if you implement them into your leadership and into your, you know, into your culture at with your pastoral staff, you actually can avoid being a micromanager at all from this day on. So, so I'm super excited about that. Have you ever, Jason, have you ever been called a micromanager?
I think I've been on both sides of this thing, right? I have been micromanaged, and I'm sure there's probably 100 people out there who would raise their hand and say, like, I can tell you a story about when Jason was a micromanager and all the, you know, the, what do they call the helicopter? You know, just hovering like, so I've been stuck in situations, and this is what we're really getting at is pastors who feel like you have no choice but to micromanage because otherwise stuff's not going to get done right. And then there's the other side of it, which is like, you know, are you micromanaging when you really don't need to be? And are you holding people back? But I think what we're talking about here is especially that feeling of like, if I don't, you know, micromanage is such a, you know, like a harsh word. It's like a four-letter word in leadership, right? But that if I don't babysit, if I don't follow up, maybe is a nice way we'd put it, follow up constantly, then stuff's not going to get done or it's not going to get done correctly. And so, yes, in today's episode, we are going through the five things that you need to do right now to make sure that you never have to micromanage anybody or anything ever again. So I know that's a big, bold promise, but you want to jump in?
Let's do it. Okay, so kind of in the same vein as yesterday's episode, so we talked about, you know, sometimes you have to let people go. So if you're in that role, if you're in that place and you're thinking, oh man, I really have to let someone go, then one of the biggest ways to keep yourself from having to micromanage your pastoral staff is to hire the right people. So even if you know on the horizon, there's just a transition coming, whatever, and you start thinking about who is that person coming in, you want to start looking beyond just skill set. You want to look, you know, beyond, you know, can they do the job that I'm asking them to do? You're looking deep down, like, is this person a self-starter? Is this person, are they going to, you know, when I give them something to do, are they going to run with it? And, you know, I don't have to keep telling them, you know, step by step by step exactly what they're needing to do. You know, are they, you know, kind of what we talked about a couple days ago about, are they the slacker, you know, where they're just kind of, you know, they love being in ministry, but they don't really like doing any of the ministry work. You know, when you hire the right people and you get people who are self-starters, high caliber leaders, productive individuals, when you do that, then you don't have to micromanage them because they, you know, the biggest thing you may have to do is rein them in, which honestly, in my perspective, I would much rather rein someone in than trying to get someone going. And so, so first of all, you just have to hire the right people.
You got
to
get the right ingredients. It reminds me of that scene from that movie. Have you seen the movie Nacho Libre with Jack Black?
Oh yeah.
Nacho. Yep. You know, they complain about his cooking at the orphanage. And he says, because you never give me any fresh ingredients, you know. So it's like it comes down to like, you know, what do you expect out of me? Like, you know, like I don't have the tools that I need in order to do the thing that you're asking me to do, you know. And so in many ways, to point number one of this five-step process, like when you hire the right person who it just intrinsically is already built that way to be, as like you said, self-starter, self-motivated, an achiever, an innovator, etc. Again, maybe some of you have to rein in a little bit. But, you know, when you got the right ingredients to begin with, it sets you up for success moving forward. There's a lot less strategy or management needed in order to get somebody to a point where you no longer have to follow up with them constantly, to put it nicely. So starting off with the right ingredients in the first place is going to ensure greater success moving forward. So take us through number two. So A lot of people out there, I'm sure, are saying, okay, that sounds great, Brandon, but I can't just fire everybody on my staff and just go hire all the right. rock stars in the world, right? So yes, if the opportunity comes, right? Yeah. If the opportunity comes to hire somebody new, then obviously that's great. But if I got what I got on my staff, like, how can you help me with where I am right now? Walk us through step number two. This is kind of, again, a more foundational thing to setting the stage for success without having to micromanage.
Right. And really, you know, the need for micromanage a lot of times comes with the culture you create and how you lead your people. And so the biggest thing, one of the biggest things you can do is manage the expectations rather than the projects or the tasks. Hmm. Now, most of us, when we slip into this micromanaging role, it's because we're trying to manage the tasks or the details or, you know, the overall project. We've delegated it out. We've given it to somebody else. We've told them, okay, I want you to go do this. And then we keep jumping in and saying, hey, are you doing it this way? Hey, have you done this? Hey, have you done that? Like, we're trying to manage the tasks themselves. Whereas on the front end, when we delegate out and we say, okay, this is what I want you to do, and we clearly communicate the expectations. I want you to do this. I want it to look like this. You know, here is the boundaries that I want you to stay within. So you can do whatever you want within those boundaries. However you want to communicate that, just communicate it clearly so you manage not only their expectations of you know, what they're going to be doing, but your expectations to, if I've communicated clearly and they know what they're doing, then if something goes awry, you can go back to it and say, hey, I communicated it clearly. So right. What's the breakdown? If you haven't communicated it clearly and they're off task, it comes back to you. And so get away from trying to manage all the tasks, because that's what you have delegated and empowered them to do. Let them do it. You just manage on the upfront expectations. And then if things need to be course corrected along the way, manage those as well.
Now, what would you say as far as, like, you know, because there's kind of two ways to look at expectations, right? There's going to be like just big picture things, like overall outcomes that we're looking for.
Right.
And then, of course, mm-hmm. there's going to be things like every pastor's got certain ways that he really likes something to go. Or, I mean, literally, I mean, I've had it down to like the pastor being really particular about like the font size on the PowerPoint, yeah. like during certain, you know, only I think it was like 5 words per line. Like after every fifth yeah. word, like create a new line. Like, I mean, like down yeah. to like, I mean, it, like it had to be that way because that's how he wanted it. So everybody's, which is fine, whatever. Like, but you know, like everybody's got their ways of doing things. So what would you suggest to pastors as far as like in managing expectations, like how much of what they communicate that's expected should just be kind of big picture overall outcome? And how much should be like, okay, I want you to do this specific thing, this specific way every right. single Sunday.
Right. Yeah. I think that as much as you can stay at the big picture side, you have hired people to do those things. Now here's the thing. Let's say you have a youth pastor and he's a great youth pastor, but kind of going to your scenario, you're asking him to do some graphic work and he doesn't have a lot of graphic experience. What I would do is either invest in his training and him getting better at it, or like be clear on what you're wanting. And so if they're, you know, going back to, if you want 5 words on a line, don't just tell him that. Like, create a template that you're expecting him to follow that you can hand to him every time you need to so that he can follow that. If you have somebody who you've hired, let's say you've hired a graphic designer, and you're entrusting their, you know, skill set and their abilities to do the graphic design, don't get in those details. Like they're the ones who are trained to do that. You move to the 30,000 foot and say, this is the overall picture that I want. You know, you help us get there in your graphic design. So, and if there is something that, you know, you just, it's a hill that you want to die on, try and communicate that up front, because at the end of the day, no, you know, nobody likes to get to the end of the project and be like, here you go. And you're like, oh, but I wanted this way and this way and this way, but you never communicated that. That's deflating for them. It's frustrating. And then the next time you come for a project, then that just increases the number of questions they come to you with. And it increases your lack of trust in them because they didn't deliver it right, but you didn't communicate it right on the front end. So, yeah. you know, it, again, yeah. it always comes back to us as the leads. We have to communicate that well. And the more we can move towards that 30,000 foot instead of the details and the finer points, the better off everybody will be.
I think you used a great phrase, like the hill you're willing to die on, like should be 30,000 foot big picture hills, right? Not like little hills. Like I remember being a part of this church once, the graphic designer, she was really, really great, really talented. I remember there just being an instance where she had made a graphic for this thing we were doing coming up. And the pastor was like, that's not what I pictured it looking like. And then like wanted her to start all over. And it was just like, the graphic looked good, but I guess he had a different color like palette in his head or something. I don't know. But you know, that's when it comes down to like, you know, either, number one, if there's for some reason you specifically saw like blue, orange, and yellow as the color palette for this graphic, right, then communicate that up front. Or like, is that really, does it really matter? You know, like the graphic looks good. She's a talented graphic artist. So she, you know, the font choice is different than you thought it would be or whatever. Like, I think a good advice is just simply to like trust the other person that, you know, they know what they're doing. This is assuming that you can, right? And we're about to get into that. But, you know, and just not be so willing to die on every hill, right? There's got to be some hills that you walk away from.
Expectations. Like, that's the thing. Like, manage your expectations. Like, if you have this, you know, picture of what you want it to be, then communicate that very clearly with fine detail, or just entrust them and expect that whatever they give you is the best they can do. Again, if they have the skill to do it and you're asking them to work in their wheelhouse, then let them come up, because probably they're going to come up with something better than you would have imagined. But because you're stuck in this like expectation of what you wanted, you're actually going to sabotage the whole thing, because that's not your field. Like, you're the lead pastor. You have other things you worry about. Let the graphic designer worry about the graphic design. The youth pastor worry about the youth, you know, ministry. Like, that's, you know, stay in your lane. And like you said, die on those 30,000 foot big idea hills, not on those fine details. Because everybody gets caught in the mud when that happens.
Yeah, especially the more your church starts to grow, there's just more and more details that for you to die on. And it just becomes exhausting. So that leads us perfectly into step number three here. The idea of delegating, the idea of entrusting, the idea of empowering. So walk us through step three of the five steps to never having to micromanage ever again.
Yeah, so when you delegate, so obviously in order to not be a micromanager, you first have to delegate. But when you delegate, really delegate it, like give it to them and then trust that they'll get the job done. You always want that. You always want the job done. And then also trust they're going to do it at least somewhat the way you want it to, and get the result that you're wanting them to do. That's the thing. Like, we sometimes get caught up in all the details of how they're doing it, not really remembering that our job is to just make sure that they do what they're supposed to do so that we get the result that we're wanting to get. And so I know for me, when I first started out, one of the positions I was in, you know, I was asked to completely transition a culture from one thing to another. And it was a huge job.
Right.
And I wasn't a very good delegator at that point. And so after a year of that job, I realized I can't do this on my own. I need help. And so that's when the next year was me learning how to delegate out. And I was working primarily with like college age students. So I was delegating things out and really just kind of trusting them and letting them run with it. And what I learned was a couple things. I learned to be okay with them missing it. I learned to be okay with, hey, I'm going to delegate this out to you. I'm going to let you run with it. And then when they came back to me, you know, sometimes they did it well, sometimes they did it really good. And sometimes they just, man, they missed it completely. And the thing was, is I learned that, okay, if they missed it, then let's talk about it. Let's figure it out. Let's learn and let's do better next time. Because sometimes there's one miss and we're like, oh, and I can't trust you ever again. And, you know, I'm never going to delegate anything to you again unless I absolutely have to. And then I'm going to micromanage you the whole time after that. Like, that doesn't do them any good. It doesn't do you any good. So when you delegate, really just trust them. And if they do a miss, you reevaluate and then you try again.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You got to leave room, not to sound self-aggrandizing, but I did a TED talk on this very same concept, the idea of like, in order to, in leadership in general, like, you have to increase, let me get my hands on the screen here. We're in these tight little split screen boxes. You have to increase the person's your delegation, their capacity to do something, and therefore the capacity to fail beyond what they've proven that they can do so far. So, you know, they've proven that they can handle this, right? They've been faithful with this. you increase, you give them a little more space, a little more room to grow, or an occasion to rise to, so to speak. You don't just hand over the keys to the kingdom, right? Because if you can't be faithful with little, you can't be faithful with much. But, you know, you got to give people a little bit of room to grow and a little bit of room to fail. And man, you hit it on the head when you said not like, you know, writing someone off, like because they messed something up one time, you know, but right. Assuming that, okay, it's all right. They just need to get some more reps in. Like they just need some more coaching. They just need some more practice. Right. And just to kind of let it unfold from there. So if right. you're just tuning back in with us for whatever reason, number one, hire the right people in the first place. Number two, manage the expectations of the overall outcome rather than the specific project or the specific task. Number three, delegate and trust the job over to them, expecting there to be some learning curve and some mistakes along the way. Now, Brandon, take us through number four. What's the next step of this process?
So one of the motivations for a lot of us to micromanage is because we want to know what's going on. We don't want to know how the project is progressing. We want to know these things. So the best thing to do is to create regular check-in points. And so let's just say that your check-in point is a weekly meeting with that staff member, or maybe the check-in point is just staff in general, the staff meeting you have every week. That's the regular check-in point for all your projects. So that means the rest of the week, you don't keep going up to them and say, hey, how's this coming? Hey, how's this going? You know, maybe you walk up and say, hey, do you need anything from me?
Sure.
Is there anything I can do to help you out? But you don't keep checking up and see how their progress is going. You have a established check-in point already. So have the discipline to wait until that check-in point. Because especially if you are, if you've been a lead pastor at this church for a long time and you have a younger or a newer staff, like you're stressing them out by checking in with them constantly. Like they want to please you. They want to make you feel confident in them. You know, they want to, you know, perform well for you. And when you're constantly saying, hey, how's it going? How's it going? How's that coming? Are you doing it right? Like they all they can focus in on is keeping you happy instead of doing the job. And so leave them alone, give them space, let them figure, because again, sometimes they're figuring it out.
Right.
And if you're constantly checking in, they're stressing out. They're not figuring it out fast enough.
Right. Or that they don't have answers for you. I remember one time I was on staff at a church in a creative kind of technical role. And I remember we were having a staff meeting once and there was like some project we were working through or whatever. And naturally there was 1,000 problems. And the lead pastor of the church, he asked me at the staff meeting, like, hey, where are we at with this thing, right? And which is fine. But, you know, like it was so complicated and we had run into like 100 different problems, half of which I had not even figured out. Like, I'm still thinking through it. And so I kind of like hemmed and hawed a little bit, like, how do I even begin to explain where we're at with all this? Like, it's kind of a big mess right now that we're thinking through. And so I said, we're working on it. And it became this like running joke around the office for like the next 2 or 3 weeks of just like when somebody asks you a short question and there's a big answer, you just say, yeah, I'm working on it. Like, yeah. And so, yeah. And it can create a lot of stress. So imagine if he had followed up with me the next day, where are we at? Where are we at? Where are we at? It'd be like, I'm trying to figure it out. Like if you want me to talk to you or you want me to get on the phone with tech support and try to figure out what's going on. And so, yeah, having those preset check-ins just gives someone some space, and it lets them know up front, again going back to expectations, it lets them know up front, okay, I have like 4 more days till I'm supposed to talk to pastor, and you know I need to have some sort of an update. And so it just gives you some runway to like figure things out and learn and make things better. So number one, hire the right people. Number two, manage expectations rather than projects. Number three, delegate and trust with occasional misses, expect occasional misses. Number four, schedule those regular check-ins and regular opportunities for coaching. And number five, the cherry on top, Brandon, walk us through what's number five.
Okay, so number five is transfer ownership and responsibility. And we've kind of touched on this a little bit. So going back to the graphic designer scenario, so you asked the graphic designer to create a graphic for whatever. Let them own that. Again, they're the ones who've been trained to do this. They're the ones that are qualified to do this. Unless you are a graphic designer yourself, let them run with that and give them the ownership. If they want to create a new way or find a new way to do it, let them do that. Because again, even when you think about your kids pastor, youth, or your a worship pastor, your youth pastor, all of them, like, you want them to be innovative. If you don't, you know, then your church is going to stagnate. So you want everybody to come up with new ideas and all those things. And so allow them the ownership so that they can find new ways to do it. They can be innovative. They can be creative, all those things. But then on the backside, and this is where I think from a micromanaging standpoint, this is where as a lead pastor, you should feel better about this. Because if you transfer ownership to them and you don't hold ownership yourself, then you transfer responsibility to them too. And so maybe they do miss and you talk about it, you retool, you figure it out and you send them out again. And then they miss again. And then they miss again. At some point as the lead pastor, you now hold them responsible for the consequences of what's going on. And maybe that's not really where you want to go. Maybe that doesn't feel good. But at the end of the day, that's how you discover whether or not somebody on your pastoral staff is holding you as a church back. If they consistently, if you're transferring ownership the way you should, then they're owning the responsibility. And when they don't come through time and time again, then it's easier to have those tougher conversations. And then ultimately down the road, it's easier to just let them go because they've had the ownership. And so they have to hold the responsibility.
Yeah. It's, man, you hit it on the head. This has been a huge frustration point for, I know, so many people in ministry, whether pastors or non-pastoral staff, is the idea that you're being held responsible and held accountable for a particular job or role, but you have no authority to make any decisions in that particular. So you don't have control over the budget. You don't have control over who I work with. You don't have control over what colored palettes I use. Like you don't have control over anything, but then if something goes wrong, like everyone's, their head turns immediately to you. Like it's your fault, you know? And it's like, well, I've been trying to tell you guys for months that, you know, that we need to do this, that, or whatever. So yeah, absolutely, man. Like giving them not only the responsibility, but giving them authority, again, commensurate with their capacity, their capability, you know, your relationship with them, et cetera. Like, you know, use wisdom, but like you can't hold somebody responsible for ultimate outcomes of a particular role or department and not give them any decision-making power within that to affect and actually influence that outcome. So you're right. It not only empowers them, it makes them feel amazing and awesome to be entrusted. But then it also, like you said, it frees up you. You don't have to micromanage and you'll find out a lot faster if they're actually good at their job or not. If they're actually can come through on those results.
Right. And I remember as a young pastor, like, you know, I wanted to perform well and I wanted to do a good job. And I wanted the pastors that I was working with and serving, I wanted them to say, hey, Brandon, great job. And so when they would give me projects where they said, hey, I want you to do this, this, and this, and I want you to do this way, this way, this way. Well, that wasn't really like, sure, I was getting tasks done, but I wasn't in that. Mm-hmm. But when they gave me something and said, hey, I'm going to let you run with this. You do whatever you want to do. Just make sure it's done by this date and we're going to do it. Like I had all the space to create and come up with new ideas and try things. And as a pastor, I was able to grow into ministry because I wasn't just doing things I was told to do. I was creating and coming up with new stuff. And that was way more fulfilling for me because they gave me the ownership and ultimately they also gave me the responsibility. So when I didn't, you know, do well, then they called me in and they said, okay, what happened here? Like what, why did you drop the ball on this? Yeah. And honestly, owning the responsibility on my end really matured me in ministry too, because I realized like, I can't just, you know, meander my way through ministry and I can't be the slacker. Like I actually have to do my best, try hard, work hard and perform well to do, to do well in ministry. So yeah, if we can transfer ownership well, hold them responsible, I think that more often than not, what you'll find is your pastoral staff will rise to the occasion and will become higher performers and more productive because of that, rather than, you know, just staying where they are. Because when we micromanage, people don't grow. And so if we can entrust them and give them ownership and hold them responsibility, they'll grow.
And here's another reality about micromanaging and not, you know, holding people accountable without authority is your high performers, your talented people, the people who really want to grow and like take it to the next level, they will leave.
They will.
You're constantly clamping down and telling them every little button to press and like every little thing that they're supposed to do, the people who are actually really creative and talented and have a lot of capacity to do their roles really well, they will get stifled. They'll feel frustrated. They're like, why am I even here? You could just hire a monkey to do this if you're just going to like spell it all out. If there's no room for decision making or creativity, sooner or later they will leave.
They will. Guarantee it.
So any final thoughts for us as we wrap up the how to never micromanage ever again in your entire life episode?
Yeah, again, I think none of us really want to be micromanagers. And so if you will follow these five things and you will really, you know, and maybe you're not good at them. You know, maybe you've had staff in the past that you couldn't trust. And so to trust and empower and give ownership, like that's really hard for you. I get that. But if you will follow these five things and really discipline yourself to implement them in your leadership and how you manage your pastoral staff, I guarantee you, you will start finding yourself micromanaging less. Your team will become a lot more productive. They will own what they're doing. And ultimately down the road, your church will grow all because you made the decision to not micromanage. And so put these steps in place, let your team do their thing. And, you know, you just kind of lead them through the process. So
it's just such a win-win-win for everybody. It's a win for the church overall in its growth and health. It's a win for that particular staff member really owning their role and feeling like they're contributing and not just like a hired hand, you know. And it's a win for you because it's stress off your plate. It's time and energy that you don't have to think about all of these little details going on that you can just trust and empower. And so I would say the biggest final takeaway from me would be to the pastors out there that it's a process, right? You can't microwave trust and microwave, you know, delegation. It's a process. And so you got to give somebody a little bit more room to grow than they've probably proven themselves yet. Not too much, right? To be irresponsible, but you just let it go. And as soon as they rise to that occasion, okay, now what else can we give them? How much more authority can we give them over this thing? What other things can we entrust them with? And so it's okay that you don't snap your fingers and by this Sunday, you know, everything's changed. Right. Like it's a process, but you really got to go about doing this way and being intentional about working this process into your culture and into your leadership style. Right. To recap one more time, number one, get the fresh ingredients and hire the right people in the first place. Number two, manage the expectations of the overall job rather than specific projects and tasks. Number three, delegate that job and trust that person to do it, understanding that there's going to be a learning curve and they're going to have some misses. Create regular check-ins and updates with them, coaching sessions, et cetera, is number four. And last but not least, you have to get to a point where you are able to fully and completely transfer ownership and responsibility of that particular job or role to them and let them grow and flourish and you know, become all that God has called them to be in that role.
Right. Well, and, you know, as we've been talking about the challenge, you know, we've been saying, hey, if you're a lead pastor, you know, and you want to, you know, have a growing church and you want to spend time with your family, one of those key points is don't micromanage. And so this plays right into our challenge that's coming up on May 3rd. And so, again, I want to encourage you, go to ministryhackers.com/challenge. May 3rd, we're going to dive into the Skyrocket Your Pastoral Staff's Productivity Challenge. We're going to teach you in those 5 days exactly what you need to do, particularly using the StrengthsFinder assessment, what you need to do to increase your staff's productivity so that you can have that growing church that's reaching the community and making an impact for Jesus and be at your kids' games and being at their dance recitals and spending the time at home with your family and having not missing out on those opportunities as they grow up. And so join us May 3rd. It's free. So there's no reason not to be a part of it. So go to ministryhackers.com/challenge, sign up. It's Friday. It's the weekend. Super excited. Any big plans this weekend, Jason?
No, not really. The weather's nice, so that's warming up. I mean, obviously there's church on the weekends, but hopefully we get out with the family and kick a soccer ball around or something. Yeah. You?
Yeah. There you go. I mean, we got soccer games. We got church on Sunday. So Sundays are real busy. I have a tree that, you know, got ground down to nothing. And so there's sawdust all over my yard. So I got to clean that up. So lots of fun stuff. So
awesome, man. Well, one last time, pastors, if you want a high productive pastoral staff and you want to create this type of culture, you want to make sure that you have the right people on the bus. You want to make sure that you build a culture of productivity around people's strengths. You want to make sure that you never have to micromanage again. We are handing everything you need over to you over the course of the 5 days, equipping you completely and totally for free to be able to do that in just 5 days' time, specifically using the StrengthsFinder's assessment and we'll get into the detail next week as to why that is. But all you have to do to join us is just go to ministryhackers.com/challenge, sign up for free, get registered, and get ready to start, have your hand in building the most high productive, highly efficient, highly effective, high caliber staff you've ever worked with in your life in 5 days, right, starting on May 3rd. That's right. And we do it all live. So go to ministryhackers.com/challenge and join us there.
All right. On Monday's episode, we're going to take everybody's favorite item on their weekly schedule, and we're talking about how to have your meetings be a lot more productive and a lot more efficient without losing productivity in the process. So have a wonderful weekend, everybody. It's great hanging out with you this week, Jason. I'll see you on Monday.
That's right.
Everyone, I'll see you in the next episode.
All right. See you guys on Monday.